This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Today, I'm deeply honored to welcome an amazing woman in the study of what burnout really is for the supportive professional and a visionary in the world of trauma healing and soulful integration, Dr. Lori Laws. Dr. Laws is a healer, nurse, author, and visionary whose work bridges neuroscience and spiritual awakening. Over the years, she's walked thousands of nurses and healers back into wholeness, guiding them to reclaim their inner authority and step into resonance with their truest design. On this episode, we'll sit with her around her own healing journey, the art of holding space for deep transformation, and what it means to anchor into the frequency of your deepest needs so you can rediscover who you truly are, even within a system that was never designed to nurture the healing heart. If you're ready to heal more deeply, expand your capacity, and remember your authentic voice, this conversation is for you. So let's go and welcome Dr. Lori. Thank you so much for bringing your medicine here. Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome to the Manifestation Therapy Podcast. I'm Judy Holly, clinical social worker, trauma therapist, master manifestation coach. This podcast blends the wisdom of universal principles with the transformative neuroscience of manifestation. You'll find inspiration for an abundant, aligned life. In each episode, I share strategies, insights, and conversations with healers, mental health professionals, coaches, thought leaders, and individuals with powerful personal stories. Before we begin, a quick note. The views and opinions expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect my personal beliefs or the principles of manifestation therapy. So take what resonates, leave what doesn't, and always honor your own intuition. Welcome. It's lovely to meet you.
I'm so happy to be here. I love talking on this topic. It's like, it's where I live most of the time, but my day job, you know, sometimes has me doing other things. So it's really nice to kind of come back to my roots and you know, embrace.
Well, it's lovely to meet you, Lori. I am Judy, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you for coming on. I love the crystal. What is it?
This has a beautiful story, probably too long to share. It's actually etched glass.
Oh.
And it's got a sacred geometry on it and a transmitter on the other side, which I don't know if you can see in the very middle there of that disc.
Yeah, I see.
I'm a seer, hearer, knower of things in other dimensions. Mm-hmm. And so I got the message to go to Etsy, where I never shop, but like Etsy Pleiadian. So I pick up my phone, Etsy Pleiadian, like,
oh.
You know, like, yeah, 10,000, you know, hits came back. I'm like, could you narrow it down? And so I was given an image. I couldn't tell if it was a pendant or a necklace or a brooch, I mean.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I did 1, 2, 3 scrolls. Oh, this is what you want me to have. And so I've been wearing it ever since.
Oh, nice.
I mean, there's a little manifestation just to get our juices flowing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your work and what you're doing.
Well,
I'm so captivated.
And I love that everybody asks that. That's so cool. I am a trauma therapist. I'm a social worker. I am all things manifestation and a coach. So basically like 15 years ago, I got into manifestation after a lot of deaths that I had kind of dealt with and a lot of therapy on my own. I was just like, I have to start creating what I want. And then The Secret, like a lot of people, Abraham Hicks.
Abraham, yep. Jerry and Esther. Yep. Eckhart Tolle. Louise Hay, Wayne Dyer. Like we're in the same tribe, girl.
Yeah. I had always been kind of spiritual, but it was like coming home, it felt like.
Right.
Then I started my career in support services, because at that time I was in high tech, actually. And from there, I just started kind of creating everything I wanted. And I said right from the beginning, I have this book I'm going to write for people that are into mental health to support them in manifestation and integrating it into their practice. But I just had to find my voice. So I finally found my voice and here I am.
It's a process, isn't it? I mean, I my first book was out this year and...
It is, yeah.
There's so much beautiful overlap in our stories. I feel like, thank y'all for putting us together, because who would have thought, like you send me this little, kind little DM. I'm like, oh, heck yeah. Your energy was just like pulsating. I'm like, I don't even know who she is, but I'm talking to her.
Might be a bit of the ADHD, but
well, but it's like there's so much there, and it's, I think as healers we don't have a lot of paths to pursue, and so we all find ourselves where we find ourselves, me in nursing, you and in trauma healing and social work, and we're called in these ways, to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And then we get into the systems that are traumatizing us and those in our care.
And so
it's like we make this full circle back to where we started, but we have to take that journey.
Right.
We have to take that journey to really live and embody our truth. And I think that's part of how we find our voice, really,
Right.
25-year-old Lori would have written a much different book than, 60-something-year-old Lori.
Yeah. So how did you go from 25-year-old you to 60-year-old you?
I have a really non-traditional story. So I started out as a CNA, Certified Nursing Assistant.
Yep.
And I did 6 years at the bedside, and I was helping people die before I had a driver's license.
Oh, wow.
And so that sort of forged what I call my healer's heart. And went off to university and was well on my way. And of course, we didn't have enough equipment and we were short staffed. Same story, different decade.
Yeah.
And so I shredded my back really bad.
Oh.
And my counselors and advisors, and I was 20 at the time, they're like, you cannot pursue nursing. Like, this is such a significant back injury and that was sage counsel, because I'm still struggling with that back injury. And so through a series of too long to tell here life circumstances, which include a kind of a near death chronic illness, dancing with the toxicity of mold that was living in my home for 20 years, trying to kill me, which was undetected. I found myself divorcing and so sick that I couldn't sit up at the age of 48. So I went back to school and at 50,
wow,
entered nursing school while I was at full-blown menopause. You do not want to do nursing school in your menopause. And at that time I'm, in my early 50s, and I'm like, nothing has changed in terms of the paternalistic, oppressive working conditions for healers and nurses. But now I've got all this life experience, right? I'm a mom of three and I've had a whole other career, a lot of life experience. Was like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not. So I went to DNP school, which is nurse practitioner school here.
Yeah.
And, got all ready to, I thought, well, primary care would be better. It won't be as bad as it is in the hospital, right? Because I really felt called. And then they were training us in the last semester before we went out and did our 1,000 hours of clinicals to do patient encounters in 12 to 15 minutes, no more than 15 minutes. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that either. So I continued on, I pivoted and earned my PhD, which was the right place. That was the right place for me because I'm kind of a scholar,
wow,
scientist, kind of geeky, kind of lots of geek flags about the cabin. And so that was a really good fit. And then I started doing neuroscience research, stroke research, and then I was teaching in a BSN program, Bachelor of Science for Nurses program, right? And it felt like I was just pushing my students off a cliff. You know, it didn't feel good. And there was no real way that nobody has figured out the secret sauce, how to have a graceful transition to practice. In most of our profession, I'm sure social work is the same thing. They get pushed off a cliff. And here's more cases that you can ever in your lifetime do. Oh, and they're all due by the end of the week. And so then I started doing this research. I started helping nurses who were refractory to burnout. Like, well, they were doing all the right things for burnout.
Right.
And they were refractory.
It's the same.
And so I really, that lit a fire. Because I'm like, it's been 50 years since I was at the bedside as a nurse's aide. And we are still having these same conversations. And still, you know, gaslighting and blaming the victim. And you should be more resilient and go take a bubble bath and light a candle. You know, you'll be fine. You know, all the things. And so then I started, I did a symptom cluster analysis, and my research strongly suggests that burnout is a symptom cluster of trauma. And so when you start, they're not separate and distinct things, because as you know, as a trauma therapist, your midbrain and your vagus nerve and your autonomic nervous system doesn't care what the upstairs brain is calling it. So that kind of got me going down this path. And then as I worked with nurses, they were really curious, because what happens, as you well know, and I know I well know, is as you start liberating the trauma from the body and the energy field, there's a lot of clearing and transmutation that happens. There's changes in the quantum entanglements.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, in the neuroplasticity of the brain and all the geeky things, right? All of that starts shift, and then there's this big, huge opening.
Yeah.
There's this huge opening for spiritual connection and awakening and everything that comes with that, the manifestations, and, you know, we step into our gifts and abilities. And so while I started over here as, you know, nurse trauma, it's sort of like people go on this journey with me into where you are.
Right.
Into the space that you're embodying more fully than I. For my light team, my guides are, you know, it's like, you got 7 years, you're going to be talking about this. So I was like, can't I just go do that? Can't I just go hang out over there? Because that feels really good. Trauma doesn't always feel really good. That always feels really good over there.
Not at all.
And so no, I'm here for 7 years, and that's the arc that the people who choose to work with me are kind of moving through their trauma. And as a, it's not a rite of passage, but it kind of sort of is, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of my long story. I'm glad you're recording it. Feel free to excise and use anything that you want out of there.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Hmm. Talk to me about how, like, have you always been spiritual?
No, well, actually I didn't step into my awakening process until my late 20s.
Right.
I think I've always been spiritual. I just didn't have the language and the people around me. So yes, I was born this way. And I had a whole host of very significant early childhood traumas. And if I had to speculate, like so many other people have also speculated, that those, you know, my spiritual connection was who was in the room with me when I was alone at night, you know, needing help. And so I was,
right,
I was getting the comfort and the support I needed, and I've always been able to see and know things that other people around me didn't see or know. And so, you know, you go through that perplexity of
right,
there's something wrong with me, you know, because you just don't have any you don't have any guidance for that, you know. No, so it was later in my 20s when I was like, oh,
when you were able,
oh, this is what it is. And you know how refreshing that, you know, that there's, when you get downloads sometimes, or you get messages sometimes without any guidance, you can start to buy into a mental illness narrative.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you have to question and rule out that. And so, you know, as a young woman, a teenager, that's a little scary to think about. But I think so many of us, like now the young younger generations. Like, you know, we're
we're
kind of the you know, indigos, and that now they seem like, I have two of my three children are healers, and but I just see so many of the younger generation. It's just like they're stepping into it so much earlier than people. And I'm older than you. I don't want to put you in my baby boomer category over here. But, you know, I'm like, I'm a few decades older than you are.
But I think the communication in the social media has sped it up, right? Because it's out there now. Yeah. Whereas we, like, I would have to go search for it. Now it's everywhere. So it's more available.
Yeah, it is so readily available. And it's not as, I mean, there are circles that still consider it woo-woo. And, you know, that will always be the case because egos do what egos do individually and collectively. But there is such a receptivity now that was not present when I was coming up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so beautiful to see, because as kind of the old woman, the matriarch now, and who has been at this for decades, there is a sense of, wow, we really did sort of help to contribute to this opening. And I have lived long enough now to see that.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
That shift, and you know, and it's just the beginning of many, of course, but how beautiful that I get to bear witness you know, to what's happening now.
What does your perfect, or what does your ideal, I should say, client look like?
Well, you know, I work with healers, nurses, and helping professionals. I happen to be a nurse scholar. I happen to be a nurse scientist.
Okay.
And so that's my native language. So a lot of, you know, in my containers and the resources I have, they are nurse focused, but all are welcome. So if you're a healer, a helping professional, I mean, we've had social workers, we've had frontline providers, teachers are really struggling.
Right.
So all are welcome, because we're all being systematically traumatized.
Yeah.
Oppressed and marginalized in our roles. And the systems in which we work are not going to change. It's not in their interest to change. So
yes,
you and I as trauma people who understand that, we can still thrive if we learn the language of our nervous system, we learn how to navigate it, and what I call, we learn how to insulate it, like putting a myelin sheath around it, you know, and so you can stay regulated in your window of tolerance, independent of the externals. But right now, so many of the people that I work with, primarily nurses, again, but all are welcome.
Yeah.
So many of them are getting bowled over day in and day out. I call it our nervous systems get hijacked at work, you know, to do our work, you know, as healers in whatever role that we choose to serve, whether it's within the medical establishment or external to an education system, but wherever we choose to work, it is required that we're regulated in our nervous system. We need to be in that ventral vagal tone so we can socially engage, so we can be grounded and centered, have our clinical reasoning and judgment, be curious and open, and be heart-centered in the care and the service that we're providing.
Yeah.
So that's what our job, that's how we all got trained in school. That's all of our licensure exams. That is what is required of us in our roles, whether you're teaching first grade students, whether you're a first responder, whether you're a social worker, whether you're a nurse, those qualities are required for us to do our jobs. And then we go to work and our nervous system gets hijacked within moments or hours. right. with the sympathetic overload. Yeah. And then comes the fawn, and then comes the dorsal vagal comes in, and then comes the freeze, and then comes the utter collapse, and that contributes to absenteeism, presenteeism, and the whole sequela that
yes.
that we all know so well. And so people are going to work, and they think, because the burnout evidence base
right.
is so woefully outdated and non-trauma informed. And the narratives and the pop culture and what you read in the news is this gaslighting mm-hmm. of, oh, you're burned out. You know, when you look at the World Health Organization, it says it's occupational stress that isn't being effectively managed. Like,
right.
So it's so systemic. It's so systemic. And so the nurses that primarily, but I have teachers and social workers, and again, all are welcome, but it's primarily nurses come in to the academy and they really believe mm-hmm. fundamentally that there's something wrong with them, because that's the conditioning.
Right. Yeah. That they've done something wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's coming to me is I had a position once where I worked with a lot of nurses. I was one of the only social workers on staff. And there was quite a few of them, not all of them, but quite a few that were almost against me giving the clients therapy, that it wasn't going to work. There's no point to it. Just give them the meds and get on with the day kind of thing. So what's coming to me is that, to me, it felt like a nursing stigma almost, where they weren't open-minded enough to understand that it's holistic. I don't know if you can speak to that or...
I absolutely can speak to that. I did two integrative health postdocs. So I'm an integrative health nursing professor. So it's like, oh, did you just want to land that right in the sweet spot of my expertise? Because thank you for that. Yeah, so we... I mean, I happen to teach in an integrative focused health program. The challenge for the way that all nurses is that we are conditioned to be interventionists. Now, we are taught that it's holistic. We get that education more in a integrative. So we are taught all of those things. And that is the chasm that the new grad falls into, the early career nurse, because we are taught the right ways to do it by and large, that it's holistic care, patient centered, you know, all of these interventions, all of these nursing interventions, all these other integrative holistic interventions complement the Western medicine approach and kumbaya.
There you go.
Life is wonderful, and off you go. And then you get into practice, and it's like you're so overextended that there isn't time to do. And this creates the moral injury. Mm. You're understaffed. You're under-resourced. You have competing demands coming in. There's all the charting, and this is part of how nurses stay oppressed in their roles.
Okay.
Is that they are so, and social workers and teachers, you know, it's not just nursing, to be clear, right? I just happen to be one. but this is how that, you know, we get so snowed under that there becomes,
right.
the social work school way, and then the real world way.
Mm.
This is the nursing school way, and then the real way. And so all of the stuff that cannot be accounted for monetarily on a spreadsheet
right.
has no value.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how nurses, because you're in Canada and I'm in the States. And so our systems, our challenges are similar, but the system delivery is different. So here in the States, nurses, if you work at a hospital, I mean, you might want to just sit down for this. This shows how systemic
right.
this oppression is. Right? Nurses in the States, if you work at a hospital, you are not considered a provider of care. Now, a doctor, a physician, an assistant, a nurse practitioner, respiratory therapist, physical therapist, occupational therapist, down the list we go, right?
Right.
Everybody on our interprofessional team is a provider of care. Do you want to know what the nurse is? Part of the room charge. No different than the bedside table or the urinal that rests upon it.
Yeah.
We are treated as chattel, as property. That is how systemic this problem is.
Right. Why? I know that's probably a big question, but how did that...
Well, back to your question, though, is why? It's because the things that you and I are talking about, the therapies, the modalities, because healing, at least the way in my research, the way I framed it, it's a repatterning in one or more dimension of body-mind essence, which is my term for body-mind-spirit, expanded to capture all the ancestral legacies of suffering and other ways, multidimensionality. Okay, so body-mind essence is the term that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And so that repatterning,
right,
oftentimes is requires some time, some nurturance, some support, and if you're paying somebody time, that's money. Can't you just give the pill? We don't have time.
Right. Treat the symptom
for 10 weeks of therapy.
Yeah.
Right. So you know, off you go. Here, take a bottle of this and a couple of that, and off you go. And so the nurse, the moral injury for the nurse, the social worker, the educator, right, whomever, the moral injury comes is that we were called our healer's heart. You know, what forged my healer's heart was what my work that I chose when everybody else was babysitting. I'm in a skilled nursing facility helping people transition. That was kind of like my trial by fire into being a healer. You know, I just didn't know it at the time. But each of us in how we came to embody our roles, our walk as a healer, right, as a light worker, however a person identifies with that, there was something that happened in our life that called us, it nudged us, it steered us to do the work that we do, right? And so we come in to our professions with our whole healer's heart. We are so earnest and loving and willing to serve in the ways that we have been called to do so. And then we go to school and we get the education that is in alignment with that.
Right.
Like you need to be holistic, whole person, patient-centered, heart-centered, all the things tick, 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 says the healer. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm in the right place. And then you go out on your clinical rotations or your practicums or whatever, and you're like, wait, there's a misalignment here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel good. And now you're so far in, it's like, well, it must just be me. I'm a student, says most.
Right.
You know, I'm learning. Of course, it's overwhelming, you know.
Right.
It'll get better. And so then we get our licenses and we get through that just treacherous first year for all. That first year is so hard. It's just so hard for so many reasons we don't need to unpack because we're all living them. And then starts coming the moral injury because you start realizing that you are never going to be able to provide that care or that service in the way that is in alignment with your healer's heart, how you have been educated, how you have been trained, and what should be done.
Yeah.
And it is such a source of existential crisis that the system, to keep everybody in check, starts calling it burnout and resilience challenge, and you need to do more self-care. And then the gaslighting begins, which is social conditioning, right? Because that's how you and I know how the brain works, right? And so you get told 3,000 times a year, and it's on social media, it's every meeting you go to, it's in the posters in the restroom and in the break room and every place you go, they're telling you,
right,
you're burned out, you're burned out, you're burned out.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to start, the World Health Organization, for Pete's sakes, is telling you it's your fault.
That's true.
Right? And so you're going to believe that to be true. And there's no organizational or system accountability in this. And so the people who I'm working with in my containers, which I have, you know, I have little short classes and a virtual academy where I work with people from all over the world. It's our safe place to do trauma healing, you know, that has this professional, helping professional kind of focus to it. And when people come to work with me in these ways, and it's all through my nonprofit, so I'm not... you know, this is light work for me. I'm retiring from my university post at the end of the year. And I'm just, you know, this is, I finally am getting to live the calling of my healer's heart in the way.
Right.
And after I've conducted the research in the manner that is high quality research, right? So this is like, I'm taking all of those skills that I have amassed and now I am applying them in these ways. And so the people that come to me, they're really at the end. Like, they're like, I don't know if I can keep going. I, you know, and I'm like, if it's time to leave the profession, I honor that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's get regulated in our nervous system first. Let's not make a reactive decision. Let's get some tools. Let's heal some things. Let's spend some time.
Yeah.
Let's spend some time together.
Huh.
Time.
Right.
And support.
And that's in the Halen Academy, is that right?
Yeah, the Halen Academy is kind of the umbrella. So that's my 501c3 here in the States. We have to say that. That says it's an IRS government approved nonprofit organization, right? So all those little alphabet soups you can now get rid of. Check. I won't get in trouble. And so that's like the overarching nonprofit organization. And then within that, I have different programs and services that we provide and I have one coming up before too long that will be kind of a rapid relief. Because what I'm finding is people just like, I just need something like this month. I just need to get through this month. I know you have, because I have a 12-week program that was derived from the research that went into my book, Nursing Our Healer's Heart, which kind of walks through all of this just as you and I are chatting.
Right.
And so it kind of walks through the science of it in a way that can get, can get it into the healer's living room for around $20, $20 or $30, depending on where you live, $10 if you read digital. Right. And so otherwise the research was going to get gatekept.
Okay.
Hmm. I mean, how often do people pull up to pick up their kids from, from a sporting practice and they pull out their peer reviewed journal?
No. Doesn't happen.
They don't, it needs to be accessible. And this was one of the big reasons why I retired and why, because the calling of my healer's heart is to get into the living rooms, get this work, get this information, mm-hmm. get these resources and tools into the living rooms of the people who need it the most. And they aren't, I've published in peer reviewed journals. That's part of my day job responsibilities. So that's, it was illuminating.
Is it groups? Like they come in and are part of a group for healing, or how does it work?
It can work kind of however a person needs it to.
Okay.
So oftentimes it starts with one person on a unit, on a floor, whatever, who's really, really struggling.
Yeah.
And they come in because they're at their wit's end. And here in the U.S., everybody's drowning in student loan debt, right? So
here too.
So that's another. Oh, okay. So yeah, I don't know your country's customs, sadly. But I love you all. I was in Ontario.
That's where I am.
Earlier this year doing a keynote.
Yeah.
Oh, is that where you are? Oh, it's lovely. I think it's Thorold. Is that how you say it? Thorold?
I'm not sure.
What usually happens is one person comes in and they're at their wit's end. They're in this existential crisis. They're drowning in student loan debt, or they're head of household and they have kiddos and, all of the things that make later in life career pivots a little more complex to navigate.
Right.
Right. And so what they come in and, we have kind of this hybrid program where I have little mini 10, 12 minute nuggets, right?
Okay.
That you can do while you're getting your groceries, while you're walking your dog, while you're picking up your kiddos from school, so you can
kind of,
weave it into your life. You don't have to set aside hours each day because nobody can do that.
Oh, it's so time consuming.
Yeah. I mean, our lives don't work that way.
Yeah.
And then we have weekly live calls where healing gets facilitated.
Okay.
And community happens. And then we also have a, community, asynchronous kind of, virtual community.
So when you say healing happens, is it like a somatic exercise you do? Or is it, I'm assuming, hopefully not wrongly, that it's holistic. So it's mind, emotion, body.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I roll.
Yeah.
I don't do the somatic, so I'm not a facilitator in that way. But I have those practices in their library.
Yeah.
So I don't happen to be like I'm. I need to be in this little. I have 2 feet that I can be in to facilitate. In these ways with the technology. So it's not
right.
practical for me to get up and, you know, I don't have a team of camera people, blah, blah, blah. So I, you know, have experts record things, or YouTube has a repository of really excellent. I of course vet them all, as I'm sure you do in your practice. Right. And access those. So what we really do is we kind of, what I call is we lean into the layers. So we don't talk about past trauma. We talk about situations and we talk about symptoms.
Oh, okay.
So we can convey without
storytelling
and re-traumatizing and traumatizing others by our stories.
Yeah.
Right. Which everybody in there has some really, you know, myself included, we're all human. We have lived some stuff, right?
For sure.
And so we start to, you know, integrate what we are doing with the practices, with the education around that, because believe it or not, nurses get no polyvagal. We get no cell danger response theory. We get, and I just sat on, just reviewed the AACN Essentials, which is kind of like the government's agency of what needs to be included in nursing school curriculum, right? Oh, so they call it the essentials, right? The rule book that I, as an educator, we have to make sure that we teach all of these things so that we have consistent, educated, and trained nurses, right? So that all makes sense.
That's too bad.
Still, nothing in there trauma informed.
Right.
Still, the gaslighting.
Right.
You know, light a candle, do more self-care, have a bubble bath, you know,
which
suck it up, buttercup kind of thing.
I mean, what I have had a lot of women in my family who were either nursing assistants or nurses, my mom including. And cancer, breast cancer specific, is so prominent in the nursing field. And so that's kind of what just came up for me thinking about, especially the ones that are palliative care nurses or high stress with caring for chronically ill. I mean, is that something, do you see people coming to you that are already on that? Yes. Okay. I saw you nod.
Yeah. You know, people, and that's where this cell danger response theory, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, Robert Navio, and how, as it turns out, to make a very complex body of research, which I was hanging on by my fingernails to really fully process and be able to translate in a way that makes sense, is that when we are exposed to prolonged trauma, which is all of us, right? Occupational, individual. I mean, you know, it's just, and we're not just like stress. We're not designed. We're not equipped physiologically to withstand sustained trauma over time. And so as it turns out, in our cells, every cell of the body, which makes up every organ, every tissue, everything, is a little suborganelle called the mitochondria.
Right.
And the mitochondria, I know we're all going back into our biology courses, reeling that information forward. And the mitochondria has 10 bazillion jobs to do, the most important of which for our conversation is that it produces the energy that our physiology needs to survive and function, right?
Right.
So what happens, and it's a higher risk for nurses because most are in hospitals where there are chemicals and radiations and lots of fluorescent lighting and lots of sensory overload sorts of things, not to mention the biological, the viruses and the bacteria and the pathogens. So there's a whole lot of inherent trauma exposure that comes with the job in a biological environmental way. But then we throw on top the avoidable nurse-specific trauma or occupational trauma if you're in a different role, because it doesn't matter. The mitochondria don't care.
Right.
The cells in your body don't care what we call it because they respond the same. So what happens is that too creates an allostatic load on those mitochondria because we are not designed or evolved, however you want to look at that whole thing, nature, nurtured, however, our bodies are not equipped. Our bodies are not equipped to withstand severely acute trauma exposure day in and day out, 12-hour shifts, 50, 60, 70 hours a week for 10 years. It's physiologically contraindicated for most nurses, and especially those coming into my programs, to continue in practice until they learn how to manage this trauma exposure. So what happens to those mitochondria? Every cell of your body, whether you're a teacher or a social worker, if you're in an occupation where you have chronic trauma exposure, then the mitochondria, they start to get a little stressed, and they create what's called oxidative stress, which is that systemic inflammation.
Right.
Bad news. We all know inflammation is not our friend, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to unpack that. We know. But what happens is over time, the cell wall of that mitochondria gets rigid and stiff.
Okay.
And now we have metabolic insufficiency. It can't. It's like if I had my arm in a cast, I can't do all of my things and it up to my usual capacity. So it's the same sort of thing. The mitochondria are hampered. Well, if that chronic trauma exposure persists, then those mitochondria get dysfunctional. And when that happens, and it happens to all, it doesn't matter if we call it burnout, it doesn't matter if we call it compassion fatigue, it doesn't matter if we call it trauma, the mitochondria don't care.
Right.
And so that leads to a whole sequela of mitochondrial dysfunction related chronic conditions, of which the breast cancer that you mentioned is one, by mechanistic overlap, not a mirror image, but by a mechanistic overlap.
Right.
And we're talking about things like PTSD, all the environmental migraines, fibromyalgia, IBS, sleep alterations of all, you know, so now we're going down all the sequela. And guess what? These are chronic conditions that Western medicine doesn't have a great solution for, and our healthcare systems are not designed to support. And so here we have the collapse, that it is physiologically impossible for us to continue. And our systems in which we work are unwilling or unable to. I mean, I'm a little nurse from Arizona in the U.S. I was able to swim through the evidence base, and it took 5 years, and get this kind of sorted in a way that was like, oh yeah, this isn't burnout at all.
Right.
You know, when I did a symptom cluster analysis, 76% of burnout symptoms are actually trauma symptoms.
Wow, that's a high.
91% of nurses have one or more symptom of PTSD, and almost 1 in 4 meet the diagnostic criteria for PTSD. Mm. So we have traumatized nurses taking care of traumatized patients because they're arguably having one of their worst days if they're in the hospital, right?
Right.
That's a place that nobody...
Or they're in the act of trauma happening, like... They're coming in as they've been in the accident or their
post, you know, like I did stroke research.
Having the heart attack. Yeah.
And that's another chasm that people get pushed off to. It's like, well, good luck with your new life, you know, and so we're just not equipped. And so that's why it's like I could only get so far within the system. I felt like I needed to start this nonprofit and move outside the system where I could affect real change in the way that is in alignment with my healer's heart, my calling as I understand it. Mm-hmm. And really, because until we heal, until we as helping professionals, as healers, until we really understand how to learn the language of navigate and insulate our nervous system from these trauma exposures, we cannot collectively come together and insist on the changes that need to happen in our respective professions. And I don't want to be all conspiracy theorist, but I'm just going to maybe tilt my head a little bit, you know, with a question mark. Is that by design? Mm. I don't know. But if you keep millions and millions of healers and helping professionals in a perpetual state of trauma, by definition, then we're not in ventral vagal tone. By definition, then we can't really optimally socially engage. We, by definition, cannot be open and curious about the world around us. By definition, we are in some variation of survival mode.
And kept in it.
Now, when you're in survival mode, can you really effectively advocate for the system wide and the organizational? I'm not saying it's not happening, but it's curious to me that 250 years, nurses have been oppressed and marginalized and disenfranchised as an occupational class. Okay? Nobody's going to argue with that. 250 years, right? We have been second-class citizens. Why is it in over 2.5 centuries, predominantly women have not been able to collectively empower? Why, you know, it just brings up some bigger social issues that we don't need to unpack, but I think we need to keep in our, move them out of the peripheral vision, kind of put them out mm-hmm. there in focus, because this is so systemic what is happening. And nurses and healers and helping professionals are as sick as we have ever been.
Yep.
Now, a lot of that has to do with other factors, right? You know, the social determinants of health being what they are, acknowledging all of that, and also acknowledging that it's not burnout, it's trauma.
No.
And until we can get to the root cause and we can, you know.
Yes.
Because really, it's like our bodies never lied to us. The system did.
And we need to build awareness of what our bodies are telling us.
Right. Yeah. And nobody's, I just went through for, in the United States anyway, for the next 10 years, it's going to be the same. You need to do better, nurses, with managing your stress, because you'll burn out. Mm-hmm. And if you burn out, then you should do these things. And it's patronizing.
You're not good enough if you haven't done them.
Right. Yeah. You have a deficit. You have a knowledge deficit.
Right.
You have a discipline deficit. The World Health Organization says that you're not managing your stress effectively. It couldn't possibly be us.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So having trauma-informed workplaces is going to cost systems gazillions of dollars that they don't have or are unwilling to spend. And so that's why I took my work outside the system.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let me do what I can. I mean, you know, I hold no aspersions that I am solving world hunger or fixing nursing, right? But what I am going to do is the one grain of sand that is my calling and that is the work of my healer's heart, that I'm going to do the very, very best I can with that in the time that I have remaining in my career. And I found that the system was a barrier to nurse safety and professional well-being. Mm-hmm. And so I can't, it's like, if I try to work within the system, it really became this clear to me. And I really sat with this for a long time, because it's like, there was a part of me that's like, well, let me get into the hospitals and let me, you know, work from the system side.
Save the world.
Right. Right. And there are others who are doing that. Right. And, but for me being, but they're doing it from the usual, and I don't want to be disparaging here, but I'm going to be a little snarky, you know, going in with the usual wellness pom-poms and woo, woo, woo.
Yeah.
And let's have some lavender and let's have some, you know, let's all take some deep breaths. And that's all good, but it's symptom management. It's not root cause trauma healing, which is why I'm being a little snarky. And so as I was really sitting with this, like, you know, because I thought I was going to write the book and be done. I mean, I did the research.
Yeah.
I had to go to writing school to learn how to write a book for people in their living rooms, because I learned how to write for scientific journals. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so I thought I was done. And I was like, oh, no.
You're never done.
Healing is... You're never done, and healing needs to be facilitated. And this is what we as healers fundamentally know.
Mm-hmm.
We want to sit with those in our care.
Yes.
And help them with the repatterning.
Right.
In the holistic sense of the word, that is going to materially shift their situation in a sustainable manner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what we want to do. And so I was looking at my choices here when it became clear that I was not done. And I was like, you know, what if I go inside the hospital with my work? It's like asking nurses, asking firefighters to go inside a burning building and do some somatic trauma releasing exercises in a burn.
Right.
Because the nervous system doesn't feel safe within that organizational structure.
Right.
It just doesn't. The midbrain is like, nope, you can tell me it's safe all day long, but it's not. And I'm going to signal to the vagus nerve all day long that you are not safe. And so people will get frustrated, and there's minimal therapeutic movement in terms of outcomes. And so it's like, okay, well, now we need a virtual, you know, we need a virtual safe place for nurses and healers to do their deep trauma healing work in community.
The connection.
You know, it's so important, you know, because I also studied, yeah, transpersonal neurobiology and relational neurosciences were two of the other disciplines that I went to, aside from nursing and neurophysiology were my two primary. And then I went into the social aspects and, oh my gosh, it's like, yeah, we all are responsible for some degree of
right
inner healing, right? That comes with it. But we are where the real big quantum leaps happen. And that's why these live calls, I say, this is where the healing happens, right? Where healing is facilitated. Because when you are in community and everybody is really, yeah, you know, moving through this healing process together, there is such... Mm-hmm. There is such co-regulation that happens. There is co-healing that happens. There is social connection, and that's all bringing us back to our ventral vagal, right? And so now we're insulating our nervous system, and now we're remembering what is possible.
Yeah. A lot of my background has been in addictions, and I always say the opposite of addiction is connection. And you see all the residential treatments are about group work and being connected with others and going through it and healing with others. So, I mean, the whole AA program.
And also connection with a higher power, however a person or a worldview.
For sure.
However that connection is made. And so, you know, the inner connection.
Yeah.
So what happens is we get disconnected. Connected within,
yeah,
right? We get disconnected without, and we get disconnected from above. And so it's so easy. And then the system would have us believe that we should all just slink off in a cave somewhere, lick our wounds, and be better tomorrow.
Mm, because it's all set to treat the symptom rather than the core. What do you do to ground yourself?
Oh, boy. Well, I have any manner of yeah. So never far from me, and I have all sorts of crystals and candles burning over here and plants and and whatnot. I am a big altar person. Hmm. So the running joke in people who are in my inner circle and come to my living space, it's like, oh, your design aesthetic, your decorating aesthetic is altar, I see. Because I literally take any flat surface.
Okay.
and you will find flowers or plants or feathers or, you know, I'm really big,
okay,
big some yeah. nature. Nature was when Western medicine could not figure out why I was dying from mold, because back then the evidence base around it, there was a paucity. It wasn't a thing.
Yeah, they wouldn't have had that. Yeah.
And so when they told me at the age of 45, when I still had three middle school age children, when they told me that they saw that I was dying and they didn't know what to do about it, I had, you know, of course, all of the emotionals. The responses like we're doing our best, but we really don't know what we're doing. And I just sort of hit rock bottom with that and was like, I came into this epiphany after I went through the bottom of despair, because I did go through absolutely the bottom of despair as any mother would. And then I started thinking about it. Because I just have enough. I have I'm a double fire sign. So it just comes. It just comes with this whole Leo firstborn baby boomer double fire sign thing I'm working with. And I was like, well, just because you, Western medicine, just because you say there's nothing that can be done, that just means really what I'm hearing is there's nothing you can do.
Right.
That does not mean there's nothing that can't be done.
Right.
And that was such an important distinction, because for the first month after I received, I had the top rheumatologist at a medical center in Los Angeles. I mean, I had excellent access. Mm-hmm. I was very blessed and fortunate, because not everybody gets good access, you know?
Right.
It's a crapshoot a lot of times. And so I was fortunate on that. And so, you know, the system would have me believe that there would be nothing I could do. I got in the back of I sold my big van and I bought a pickup truck and I put what I could in the back of my pickup truck and I went and lived in nature for a whole year.
Huh.
All four seasons.
Good for you.
No technologies, no anything. And I was like, I am just, and all of different spiritual and healing traditions, we don't have time to unpack, but everybody finds their way in that. And so I really got reconnected. And that's part of what my research is and what integrative health is that really leveraging our body's innate capacity for healing. Our body is always where I wasn't even a nurse at the time.
Right.
I was not a nurse at the time. I wasn't well enough to sit up in a chair by myself for more than an hour.
Wow.
But that's what got me to nursing because I realized that within each of us, our body's always working towards optimal health.
Right.
And so how can I support myself in this? And of course, we didn't know that the house was trying to kill me with mold. We didn't know that. But of course, as I got out and lived in nature and, you know, and I started not being poisoned anymore, I still had a lot of poison, my mycotoxins in my body because the body can't excrete them without help.
Takes time, yeah.
Right? Yeah. But at least, but there wasn't any more coming in. And so I started feeling enough better where I could start kind of putting the pieces of my life back together. And of course, the marriage didn't survive and, you know, nothing survived. Yeah. Yeah. So nothing survived that.
Has your family been supportive? How does your kids handle the spiritual pieces?
Yeah, you know, it's is what I call life interrupted. And so I think, you know, this wasn't just a trauma for me.
Yeah.
This was a trauma for the whole family system.
Right.
That mom is so sick and my husband at the time, a good man and a good father.
Right.
And we all got dealt such difficult circumstances that, you know, our family system didn't remain intact. And that happens in the face of great trauma sometimes. And that doesn't mean that there isn't love and compassion and caring.
Right.
I'm very close with two of my three children and my third child, there's no estrangement there. It's, you know, he's the oldest son and I have two daughters and the two daughters are healers. And so of course we just, you know, we're in that juiciness together. It was really interesting that it feels like, you know, in fact, the working title of Nursing Our Healer's Heart before that title was decided upon was fixing our fractured life.
Yeah. Connection.
And so I would say that was what happened through, you know, my trauma journey. It fractured the life that I had chosen to get me to live that my ego had chosen, and not in the ego is always in innocence.
For sure.
And it's always working to protect our survival. So ego isn't a bad thing in my book. It's just an aspect of the human experience. But that was the life that my ego chose. But my higher self and my soul had this path for me to walk.
Okay.
And so this huge trauma that fractured my family and, you know, brought me to the brink of my own mortality.
Right.
And required me to drill down into my own spiritual knowing and being and doing and living from that place, and then getting the skills to learn how to do the research like a big girl neuroscientist, and then all of the things that we have talked about. So it's been quite an arc, because that happened in 2000 at my sickest. It was 2008. So it's just been 17 years that I've since I've been on that journey. So it's
right.
I'm tired.
What a journey it's been.
Yeah. So, but nature is my go-to for healing. Always, always first.
Yeah. Is that something you do daily? Like, what is a non-negotiable that you don't go a day without kind of thing?
I don't go a day without being silent sitting or meditation. I like to use silent sitting because the mind's always going to produce thoughts.
Yeah.
The heart's always going to beat. The lungs are always going to breathe.
Right.
So sometimes if, you know, my container, I reframe that to be silent sitting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I like to light a candle and I have some, you know, just, and even if it's 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And then in nature, always.
Yeah.
Every day has to, you know, and I go for, you know, I go for walks, and I haven't been as physically active since, you know, the book came out. This has been a kind of a big year. My mom died, and my, you know, so we've just, I'm navigating a lot this year. So I'm not as physically active, but for every day, for sure, I'm a big water drinker. I'm really disciplined with sleep and sleep hygiene and, you know, the basics. And then, and then I'm, you know, my spiritual, you know, I am a spiritual being having a human experience. And really, really living, you know, I did a lot of work with Eckhart Tolle. I've been in.
Oh, I'm going to see him in October. I'm very excited about it.
He's wonderful. I did his School of Awakening and many of his programs.
Okay.
And so it's just the practice of staying present, which is, you know, as we all have so many competing demands, that it's so easy for that, for all of that to kind of sweep us away.
Right.
And so,
That is actually one of the questions I usually ask is, who do you admire or look up to other than Eckhart? Is there any kind of,
well, my, you know, in the trauma space, and I had the good fortune of working with her personally, is Bonnie Badenoch. I don't know if you're familiar with Bonnie Badenoch.
Oh, I've never heard that name. No.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. Trauma and the embodied brain, I think. Trauma and the embodied. You would love her work.
Okay.
And she did a workshop that's really excellent on Sounds True. Mm. So if you're in, you know, I mean, her book is excellent, but if you want to just kind of like be in her presence as she lives her work, oh my gosh, that was beautiful. So I would say Bonnie, in terms of Jean Watson, in terms of nurse scholarship, is, she endorsed my book, and I feel like she's my nurse mom. Mm-hmm. Like, I love her so much. Eckhart Tolle was what got me through the mold illness and through the spiritual awakening process. And I would have to also give credit to Louise Hay, who was a pioneer in, you know, and you can heal your life.
You can heal your life.
Yep. And at my age, you know, and this is kind of what I'm anchoring myself in, because there's a part of me, it's like, I'm tired, I'm old, you know, should I go play pickleball like all my friends? No, I'm not interested in nothing against pickleball, but it's just not what my healer's heart is here to do this time, you know? And so I'm always quick to remind myself, you know, Louise, she wrote her first book at 60-ish.
Right, I know, yeah.
And then she started her little publishing company, Hay House, which just got bought up by one of the big four, which was, you know, and that's, I went to Hay House, was where I went to take my writer's training.
Mm, fascinating.
So I've went through all of their programs, learning how to write like, you know, a proper author.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, a scientist, because it is very different writing style.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
I'd have to put Louise up there. And I think those, you know, I mean, there's more, but I think that gives you a good sense of, Esther and Abraham here, because I'm like, Wayne Dyer. Okay. You know, and now we're out of the gates and running. Julia Cameron, the artist's way.
Okay.
She was very helpful in connecting me with my voice, my inner voice, Kaya Ra and the Sophia Code, Lynn Andrews and her Medicine Women series. Okay, so now I'm just word vomiting.
If there was two sentences that you could send to the world, a message, what would it be?
That's pretty funny, because two sentences is like me doing a 15-minute patient encounter. but I'm going to play along. If I could send a message to the world, that you are not broken.
Okay.
You are not stuck.
Right.
You are whole, perfect, and complete exactly as you are in this moment. And change and a pathway out are possible. Find your tribe. Find your people. Find your resources.
Yeah.
That was past two sentences, but there it is.
That's all good. It's okay. Have you ever heard of, I always say it wrong, but Kitsuji? So it's a Japanese art where pottery breaks.
Yes.
And they put it back together with gold.
The gold leafing.
I always use that with some of my clients that say they're broken. I'm like, well, broken stuff can come back together,
you know,
in beauty.
It's, you know, well, And I don't know in your circles if you do any sand tray therapy.
I haven't, but I have heard that it aligns. There was someone making a list of modalities, and brain spotting was with sand play. I was like, huh, that's interesting, because brain spotting is my thing, and it's pretty amazing. So,
well, when I had the good fortune to work with Bonnie personally and my family back in the late 80s, early 90s, just by my angels, who else could set that up? And she's a pioneer in sand tray therapy.
Okay.
You know, it is, she doesn't talk a lot about it in that particular book that I recommended, but
yeah.
She is, it has such tremendous therapeutic value. And I wonder sometimes, you know, because I see my alters, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe there's something more going on here than my spiritual connection,
huh.
you know, because I recreate the alters, or if a loved one is going through something, or if I am experiencing a challenge. And so, you know, alters for me are very dynamic spaces.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I wonder if that's Bonnie's influence of all the sand tray work.
Yeah, maybe.
That we did together. And, you know, so it's a beautiful modality that is helpful. And I'm not a therapist, so I don't use it in my work, because it's out of my scope of practice and expertise. So, you know, I'm talking anecdotally here.
Right.
But it was such a safe
right.
and effective way to kind of get into those deeper layers without having to re-traumatize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it was...
I'll have to look it up more. I'm curious.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a brain spotter, you know, they're kind of, you know, like, and it is so fun.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
You know, that I now have alters everywhere, and I just didn't realize I was studying sand trays with Bonnie.
That's funny. Maybe I'll get some for my office. Okay, is there anything else that we've left out that you want to say?
Oh, I'm just so grateful for the good work that you're doing. And
thank you. You too.
Yeah, it's just beautiful too. And I didn't even know. Usually there's like a preamble and then we just kind of roll into the, you know, like questions. And so it was such a beautiful organic conversation. And hopefully you don't have to edit out too much of it.
Yeah.
But I just want...
I want
to just say to all healers and nurses and helping professionals out there that the time for us to name the wound, reclaim our healing, and thrive in our roles is now. Because if we don't take action in these ways, starting with the nervous system,
yeah,
and really learning how to use our most primal systems and midbrain that have kept us alive over the millennia,
right?
Before all this got like hyped up, right? And leveraging with our body's innate wisdom,
yeah,
in those ways, and starting there as the foundation of our self-caring practices, that we really can transcend this. We're not stuck.
Yeah.
We're not broken. We don't need fixing. This is how we have adapted to all that we've endured, and we can continue our story, and we can shift the paradigm into one where we feel professionally safe and well in our roles. So that's my prayer.
From surviving into thriving.
That's what it is.
One more. Where can people find you?
Ah, well, thank you. Probably the best place to find me is at my website, drlorilaws.com. And I'm at Dr. Lori Laws everywhere. It's like, it's really cute that Grandma's trying to do social media, but I'm there.
And there will be links in the show notes as well.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Judy, I'm so grateful, and to your beautiful, vibrant community. Thank you all for the amazing light and love that you are. May it ripple out and come back to you tenfold.
Beautiful. And thank you for everything you do, Lori.
Thank you.